we should be grateful they even let us communicate with people at all.
That's right.
Oh, you got some new music there.
Yes, I do.
I was getting tired of that other stuff.
Hey, good evening, everybody. Hello, we are live right now. It's Tuesday, October 18th, 2022. You are listening to The Fakeologist Show on the Fakeologist Audio Network. I'm The Fakeologist. I'm here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And I come to you almost daily. I bring this broadcast almost too often to you. But I might have to cut back because I am getting so far behind in all the things I need to do personally and technically. The music you're listening to right now was sent to me by, let me get the name right. Oh, come on here. It was sent to me by Real M Trotter X. Real M Trotter Music. Hello. And he wanted to help out with some time, talent, or treasure, so he's giving me his time. Thanks so much. Sorry, I pressed the wrong button. And this is his first take at some copyright-free music for the Fakeologist Show. I don't know. It's kind of groovy. It's okay. What do you think, Lynn Ertel? Lynn Ertel's my guest tonight from the great state of Maryland. Hello, Lynn.
We should never underestimate the power of art and music and poetry, mm-hmm. because the human mind is fundamentally irrational. You and I could sit here and, you know, analyze and debate evidence and logic and everything else, but what really moves the masses is emotion. And that's triggered or generated by art, by music, by images. So I would never – it's a culture comp, a culture war that we're really about here. And that creates the space, the Overton window, in which we can then put some rational, cold-blooded analysis of things like media fakery and fake virus hoaxes, pandemic hoaxes, and climate change lockdowns and all the horrors that we're about to witness. Because as I was saying earlier, I'm increasingly focused on the kinetics. By that I mean things that apparently are really happening. Like if they say a third of the population of Ukraine is without power or water, because maybe some Russian drones or predators knocked out some key installations after their bridge in Crimea was blown up with a truck bomb. I have watched the video of that on my sources, redacted with Clayton Morris.
Yeah. Hey, Lynn, let me hold you off for one sec, because this is what I do now. This is something new. We were talking about trench warfare, how I get the show on the air. Right now, I am streaming on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, DLive, and, of course, the great Fakotube.com. Now, I'm only on YouTube right now to tell the good listenership that found this introduction of today's show, episode 634, FAK 634 with Lynn Ertel, just to tell you that I'm on Fakotube, and I want you to come over now to, or I'm on YouTube right now, I want you to come to Fakotube to listen to the rest of this really interesting chat that I'm having with Lynn Ertel, who's been a truther, who's a regular caller-inner, has been looking into 9/11 since the very beginning, one of the originals, one of the most interesting people you can talk to, and that's why we have her on for about an hour tonight. So I'm going to say goodbye to YouTube. So goodbye, YouTube. Come to Fakotube and look for FAK634 if you want to hear the rest of this. Okay, so now you can talk about vaccine viruses, all that kind of stuff, Lynn, with great abandon. I hope none of the words we used earlier triggered the YouTube censorious people. But I also want to make one other show note before you go, because when you get going, you get going. The Discord, the Fakeologist Discord, was blown away, nucleated today, nuclear'd, as George W. Shrub Bush would say, nuclear'd. It was nuked, so it's no more. It's gone again. This is maybe the third or fourth time. It's hard to keep track. And, of course, Velicet, who is my technical advisor, He is flying from America back to Australia right now. So he's going to be out of commission for the week because that's a hell of a trip. So we have a very weak Discord reconstituted server right now. If you go to fake11.com/Discord, that's the forever evergreen link. You can always click that link. And fake11.com/ quite a few different keywords gets you in and around my site. And soon it'll be fake11.com/matrix. That'll be my matrix server. So get ready for that. I'm going to look into that tonight if I have some time. Well, there you go. That's what's happening. And so I've had a lot of technical difficulties this week. The VeloBox melted down as well, coincidentally, which now it doesn't matter because I'm not streaming live to audio chats now. So that's what's happening. I wanted to give you guys a heads up. And now Lynn, again. So Lynn, you are familiar with IPS. You're a regular on his show. And you know how he likes to just constantly find new places to broadcast. And he has his share of troubles, too, with YouTube and all the others and people harassing him. So are you surprised by all this?
Oh, Tim Osman at IPS has been subject to all kinds of... he's got White House-connected people, you know, stealing his identity, going years back, you know. I mean... probably the QAnon people, George Magazine and the Watkins boys and that whole crest. So he's been stalked and targeted, and he's pursuing them in court and YouTube as well. I believe he's suing for identity theft, I guess, and maybe copyright violation. And because I think they actually tried to steal the name of his site or his domain. It's crazy.
Oh, that's crazy. Hey, Jacques Waugh is in the chat on FakoTube chat. He says, on December 16th, 2012, this caller called into WOEIH, episode 135, and bitched out Mark Passio for 10 minutes. Does that sound right? Does that sound like...
10 minutes? I wouldn't have spent 10 minutes that much on Passio. But if this was in 2012, I wouldn't be surprised because people like Mark Passio never said a word about media fakery back then. I have no idea what they're saying now.
Yeah,
I bitched out.
Jacques Waugh, if you've got the link, give it to me. Give me the link. You can put it in fakotube.com and I'll play it. And then we can see if that is Lynn. And, yeah,
I don't know. I don't know that I would have spent that much trouble talking about Mark Passio. I used to call into Republic Broadcasting Network, but Passio wasn't on there. I think.
Did you talk to Alan Watt?
No, I never got to talk to Alan. I listened to a lot of Alan Watt stuff. It's kind of hard, you know, that heavy Scottish accent's a little bit hard to take after a while.
I agree. It's not easy.
Yeah, I don't share the same adulation of Alan Watt that somebody like Marcus Allen does. I never thought of Alan Watt as all that particularly original. I'm sorry to say that, but it is very educational for some people to listen to. And, of course, Alan Watt's presentation was very dark, very negative, but very informative.
Right.
But
his alleged wife on, or widow on last night.
Yeah, she's maintaining his website. Is that right?
That's what we're told. Do you believe that? Do you buy into that? Or do you have any skepticism there?
Well, if it's out there, it's out there. I mean, he produced so much material. As long as that stuff is archived so people can go out and listen for themselves, you know, there may be a lot of people who don't know about things like the Tavistock Institute or the Frankfurt School or any one of a number of a wide range of subjects that Alan Watt would talk about. It's like listening to Michael Tsarian, or he's another one who I haven't heard from, or, I don't want to throw Jordan Maxwell in there because I have skepticism about Jordan Maxwell. I don't particularly.
In what
like
way? And have you heard of Anthony J. Hilder? I recently...
Yes. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And Hilder actually did a lot of really good stuff on...
You liked him, huh?
Yeah, on globalist organizations and secret societies and so forth. It's like Carol Quigley, one of those. I mean, you're dealing at things from a very, very high level. I'm trying to recall if Anthony Hilder emphasized the secret society aspect.
Yes.
As much as somebody like, say, Jordan Maxwell. But yeah,
oh,
they were
on together quite a few times, and I thought Anthony was much more informative than Maxwell. He always.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because Anthony would get right to the banking, the economics, the money. He could name the, yeah, you're right. Jordan Maxwell really had a is he still around? I think he.
No, he just died. I think Tim Osmond had him on the show.
Right.
Tim and Osmond then he died.
Right. Tim Osmond was doing, I guess, the Dark Matter Digital Network or...
Yeah, whatever
one
that
of
meant.
The,
yeah.
He had taken over one of the venues, Art Bell's old venue, and was interviewing Jordan Maxwell. I don't like people that rely too heavily on gematria,
yeah.
especially when they're using English. Gematria was not developed from English. It was developed originally from Hebrew and Aramaic. Maybe can be applied to Greek. Probably not to Latin or English. I mean, you know, but gematria. Okay, yeah, it's a kind of encryption. Well, you know, I'm beyond encryption.
Mm-hmm.
I'm beyond symbolism. You know, I'm looking at the kinetics, and the kinetics involve real things that are happening to real people as a consequence of a fake worldview and a fake media that's propagated because it manifests itself. In society, the culture manifests itself in the political economy, you know, in the theater of elections, right? There's a big election coming up here in another couple of weeks on November the 8th here in the U.S. And obviously, they've got the minds of millions of ostensible conservatives, Republicans, whatever you want to call them, MAGA people, and not just the really rather tiny cult of QAnon freaks, but I shouldn't call them freaks, actually, but QAnon sectarians, I'll call them, who really are emotionally very heavily invested in this upcoming election. And my statement to them is this. Well, if they were able to rig the last one, what the hell makes you think they won't be able to just as easily rig this one?
Right.
Is that an unreasonable question? Am I ruining? Did I just pop somebody's balloon or, you know, rain on their parade? I hate to do that. Of course, all elections have always been rigged. There's nothing new about that. Listening to the Trump people whine and cry about it, like, oh, this is the first time that a national election was ever stolen. I lived through the Nixon-Kennedy election in 1960, and everybody was convinced that that was so close. The only reason why they gave it to JFK is because Mayor Daley rigged the numbers coming out of Cook County, Illinois.
All right. You
very
told me
close.
About that.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. That's right.
I've lived through rigged elections right here in Maryland, several gubernatorial elections I could go into
mm-hmm.
where it was pretty obvious they were rigged, where the Republican was winning up until, like, I mean, right after midnight, and then all of a sudden the numbers reversed. As the votes started coming in from PG County, Montgomery County, and Baltimore City, see? And that's how they do it. They bring in the urban vote late.
But I've
also participated in electoral politics extensively in the late 70s, running third-party candidates in Baltimore and New York and Philadelphia, working on campaigns for mayor and for senator and governor. And at least one of those... believe it or not, the candidate actually won the Democratic nomination for governor in Illinois, I believe, beating out Adlai Stevenson Jr. You may recall that. That was a LaRouche candidate.
Okay.
And then they all ganged up on her. But what I'm trying to say is elections here in the United States are always fraudulent and routinely rigged. Most of the time they don't have to because both candidates are owned anyway. First of all, they don't really allow third parties in much.
No.
Now, I noted that the debates, I listened to some of these debates. I believe the one in Georgia had a libertarian on the rostrum and maybe one or two of the others. But the way they cut out any third party, I noticed they didn't have the Green candidate there. The way they cut, you know, first of all, I'm going to give you a choice in life. You ready?
Yeah.
Coke or Pepsi? Quick, Coke or Pepsi?
Well, for me, it's Coke, but I don't drink either anymore.
Right. Well, okay, but what happened to Dr. Pepper?
Right.
Mountain Dew, 7-Up, Orangina, Yoo-hoo. No, sorry, you don't get that. Just Coke or Pepsi.
I
That's
got you.
it.
You only get two
Yeah,
choice. Yeah, it's not a
right. You'll get
choice.
you, you
It's
right. You can vote for Yoo-hoo, but you're still going to get Coke or Pepsi. You might steal some votes from Coke or Pepsi with Yoo-hoo. You know what I'm saying? That's how they run it. I participated twice in the presidential campaigns of Ross Perot because I thought we could stop NAFTA. I really did. I thought we could turn NAFTA around. And that, because I thought trade globalization was going to be the biggest disaster of the century for the American working class. Just a total, all the great manufacturing jobs being shipped out to these cheap labor locations, principally Mexico, but then later, with the GATT, the Global Agreement on Tariffs and Trade. This was all a product of the Clinton administration because the Bush Senior, Il Capo di tutti i capi, real mafia. So he couldn't get NAFTA through. The right-wing Republicans couldn't get NAFTA through, but a nice, soft liberal Democrat like Bill Clinton, he just breezed it. Well, you might remember Larry King featured a debate between Al Gore. This was interesting, too, because Perot was running. This would have been the election of
Freedom, man.
1992.
Hold on,
That's what
Lynn. I
it's all
found
about.
the audio. Hold on a sec. Hold on a sec. He said it's at the 1 hour and 45 minute mark. 1 hour and 45 minutes. You call in. This will be funny.
Has to be done like this. You have to recognize you've already not been doing the real great
No,
work of changing
that's not me.
consciousness enough. You didn't have
No, that's
enough
Mark
people to get
Fascio.
on
Okay.
board with that work and that effort. And if you was completed and accomplished, that I to say that the number of men at the enter in the last verses, nothing here is since freedom is a gift from God. And do I happen to understand it? Yes, I do. Many other people have understand it throughout in the last. The
Trying to find it here.
re-education deaths. That's one of the first things that was a failure. That's, in the first invasion.
They were in the middle of a world war.
For truth and freedom. I don't know if we're at that level of courage as a people. I somehow have a very negative stance when I look out the window, when I make something powerful. Resources slave the notch to go forward a notch, so to speak.
So what were the failures of the American Revolution? Clearly, they failed to abolish slavery.
Hey, that's you, Lynn. See, there we
Yeah,
go.
that is me. That is me. You're right.
You remember the call? Wow. Jacques must be a real big fan to remember that.
Yeah.
That's
Yeah,
funny.
that was 20. That was in 2012.
Yeah.
Okay, well,
Isn't that
yeah.
interesting? I don't know what was
So
being said.
yeah, I might go back and post a link. I mean, I'll go back and listen. That was probably. Oh, Mark Passy is really into the Illuminatus and Masonic origins of the United States and all that. And I was probably throwing some history at him about, why didn't they abolish slavery or at least phase it out?
No, that's
right.
here.
Right.
It
Yes.
turned out to be a disaster.
Well,
There was a heavy,
the
heavy.
first thing is in the signing of the Declaration of Independence, they couldn't even get that through without making capitulations to the South to strike out the anti-black slavery clauses that were included in the original drafts. That's one of the first things that was a failure that started, I think, that moral failure paved the way for all of this coming back and encroachment of tyranny. That's one thing. Another
There,
thing.
there's also the. Also, the question of the Native Americans
Of
and the
course,
limits of the frontier.
that
The
they
British.
conquered this land to begin with, that it was already inhabited by people. We didn't just co-inhabit it. We came in and conquered it. That's another.
All right, I'll post a link to the show. Thank you, Jacques. That's very interesting. Very interesting indeed. Does that guy still do a show?
Mark Passio, I think, is, yeah, I'm pretty sure I see him from time to time doing podcasts and stuff. Yeah. He's apparently pretty well established and well respected, among sort of I don't know, mainstream truthers, or I don't know what to call them, But Mark Passio, he just gets so much into this sort of Well, first of all, I don't like God, God, God being dragged. I know you feel the same way. I just don't want to hear this. God. Everybody's got their interpretation of God.
Right.
And, you know, when I start hearing people invoke God, and yes, it is true that the founders of the American Republic used the argument of nature and nature's God, as Jefferson refers to it in the Declaration. And yes, they were many, probably most of them were Christians, although some of the top leaders were not Christians in any conventional sense. They were deists. That is to say, they believed in the God of Sir Isaac Newton,
right.
Who was the monarch, who was super Masonic. That's the Royal Society. And so their concept of God was the idea of the architect of the universe. He constructed, they referred to the universe as God's clock. You know, God set the clock, and then he stepped back and let it run.
Right.
That explained the existence of evil in the world and the frailty and imperfection.
And that's not a bad one. I like that, God's clock. I like that.
Oh, because, yeah, Newton was above all a rationalist. He believed, the logos, this is the term they use for this is the logos, which goes back to the ancient Greeks, natural law. As we know it, natural law, not man-made law, which is supposed to reflect our understanding of natural law. The problem when you use a phrase like natural law is, you know, it depends who's interpreting it, right?
Yeah.
Because in the ancient world, natural law dictated that some were born to be rulers and some were born to be slaves. Mm-hmm. That was their natural law. In the 16th century, 17th century, natural law dictated that evil spirits and demons and witches and incubi and succubi and demons, you know, existed and were real. That was their science. So our natural law, like, which is science basically, it's always relative to the period in which it manifests itself, and then it's superseded by a new system of natural law. In the natural law invoked by Jefferson in the Declaration of Independence, the African-American slaves who were here were probably considered a little, you know, inherently inferior and less than human. And you can get that from reading Jefferson's notes on the state of Virginia, where it really reflects his – and looking at some of the ads he put in local periodicals of – offering rewards for, in one case, a runaway slave and stuff like that. I mean, and Jefferson's refusal, indeed his sabotage of the new republic that was created on the island of Haiti after they threw the French colonialists out. Jefferson absolutely, I mean, he was supposed to be this diehard, you know, believer in republican virtues, supporter of the French Revolution and all that. And yet he did everything possible to kill the Haitian Republic and undermine it and isolate it. And he thought the idea of an independent black republic in the Caribbean would be extremely dangerous because it would beckon to slaves in the South as encouragement for them to rise up. And this is all U.S. history. Do people really care about this anymore? I go on and on about this because
let's talk about current stuff. You were talking earlier about Kanye. What's your take on the whole Kanye thing? He's hot this week. He'll probably be frozen cold by next week.
Well, you know, there we're into the culture conf again, the culture war, and the fact that music, in this case, I suppose, pop music or hip-hop,
mm-hmm.
really has a much, much more powerful effect on motivating people than does rational argument or evidence. That's the unfortunate position we find ourselves in. So, with the case of Kanye, no one would care except that this guy sells millions of, we used to say records. I guess they're not records anymore, right? What does he sell? Does he sell CDs? Or he sells hats. He sells shoes. He sells
I was
shirts.
Just about to throw out hundreds of CDs from 20 years ago. Do you think I should or just keep them?
No! Don't throw away CDs. Unless,
no?
I mean, do they go bad after a while?
Well,
like,
I don't really.
Like
I don't play them. I threw out all my LPs.
Oh, right, yeah, oh, yeah, no, keep, you know, they want everybody to be to be listening to Spotify, or, you understand,
yeah,
they want everybody
right.
to be borrowing the music and renting it and paying for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, that's crazy if you've got CDs, you know, you've got CDs, keep them. you need a CD player. They'll probably make that harder and harder to find, but
yeah,
maybe not. Maybe not.
So you say keep them. You say keep them.
Either that or, I don't know, copy into a thumb drive, which is more compressed. But the thing is, CDs will last a while. They don't degrade. You know, they're like almost like vinyl, you know, like vinyl, like 33 and a third RPM, you know. They're almost that, you know, except they don't scratch. But do they lose data over time? I don't think so. I think they last for quite a while. That's an interesting experiment because I have a lot of old CDs, and they're still just as good as they were when I bought them. You know, from the 80s when I got a lot of them. But I consider CDs to be in the realm of what what we call residue, which is increasingly important, like books, printed books and magazines and periodicals.
What's your take on Mandela? I talked to a guy from South Africa and Rhodesia last week, and he...
Yeah, I listened to the interview with Peter Wright.
Did you like that? Because yeah, that's some history
there. Yeah, that was
there.
your second interview with him, and obviously he's really lived through the history of what went down in both Rhodesia, now called Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
But I guess for him it was Rhodesia, which is where he's originally from, right?
Well, he's originally from England. The family moved down there to make a go at farming. What a...
Right, and I'm sure we're very good at it. And then they were forced to leave Rhodesia, and he moved to South Africa.
Right.
And then he said he had briefly been, or he moved back to Rhodesia for a while.
That's right. But what do you think?
And his son is still there, right?
Yes, because his son was rejected by Canada. How terrible is that?
That's crazy. Well, that's because his son's white.
Exactly. Exactly. Even though, yeah,
right.
Exactly.
He doesn't fill the check boxes for the replacement population. He's a white European, and that's no good. You know?
But man, does he probably ever disagree with the rehabilitation of the Mandela figure?
Well, okay. Here's the thing about Nelson
I don't have
Mandela.
The...
Yeah, go for it.
He was in prison for quite a long time on Robben, you know, like 20, 30. I mean, he was originally arrested and tried as a terrorist. In the 1960s, in the early 1960s, and was in prison until they negotiated a settlement which involved a new election, in which for the first time, basically all the black Africans were allowed to vote. And those would be principally the people they referred to as Bantus, I guess. And then, you know, I thought it was interesting. He mentioned the figure of Gotabu the Lazy and the role of the Zulus and how, you know, they basically failed to emerge as the leading leadership in the country after the overthrow of the end of the apartheid regime.
Yeah.
Government.
And wasn't that interesting? It was all about banking as well, huh? And trade routes and...
Remember there were sanctions imposed.
Yeah, it brought it to its knees. Yeah,
yeah. Rhodesia especially was isolated and sanctioned economically, and economically crippling. And I think what we could get into, we could talk about, for example, the death of Steve Biko.
Oh right.
Right, not as famous as Nelson Mandela. And they made a movie about it with Kevin Kline, I think, playing a white journalist. Biko was ultimately arrested. I think he created something called the Black Consciousness Movement.
Right.
And he was ultimately arrested and then died in police custody. Apparently, he was beaten to death. So.
Biko.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's Peter Gabriel.
Yeah, that's right.
Song, maybe. Okay.
Not a bad song.
Well, this was a call celeb, the South African situation. I mean, there were congressmen and their followers sitting in the Capitol. We're going to talk about, you know, January 6th insurrection. Well, opponents of the South African government were sitting in, or South African regime, as they called it, because it was ultimately denied legitimacy. They were sitting in the Capitol and disrupting things and all that, you know. Sitting into the congressional offices, demanding a boycott. This was when Ronald Reagan was still president. The problem is that the optics were really bad for the government of P.W. Botha and then later F.W. de Klerk.
Right. Boy, you have a memory, man. That's amazing.
Well, I lived through it.
Yeah.
I lived
But you
through
can
it.
Remember all these names. It's great.
Yeah, it's all it's all there. Now, a movie was made starring Sidney Poitier as Nelson Mandela and Michael Caine as F.W. de Klerk. And the movie tells the official canonical narrative story of how the de Klerk government negotiated a release of Mandela and his agreement that everybody would submit to a peaceful election and transfer of power. And then Nelson Mandela ran against F.W. de Klerk for president.
Right.
And Nelson Mandela won more votes. And that was sort of, and things proceeded from there. But I have to say about Nelson Mandela, who was a lifelong member of the African National Congress and the Communist Party of South Africa.
Right. Was that the Fabian, Lord Milner?
Well, no. These were Stalinists. Stalinists. The Fabians are don't confuse. The Fabians are more what you would call social democrats.
Okay.
You know, they're willing to wait. They're willing to move slowly. The communists favored armed struggle.
Okay,
which can
good.
Be characterized as terrorism, I suppose.
Right. One man's freedom fighter is another man's terrorist, right?
Right. That's what we get into there. And originally, Nelson Mandela had been for peaceful protest, which involved demonstrations, sit-ins, and strikes.
And necklacing.
No, they were not necklacing anybody in the beginning.
Oh, okay.
Right. There is a long history to South Africa. And that history proceeds right on up to something called the Sharpeville Massacre, in which units of the South African Army fired on unarmed protesters. Whether they were rioting or whether they were peaceful, you know, that's a matter for some debate. But what I'm saying is the apartheid government in South Africa really made itself look brutal in the eyes of the world. Now, are you going to say these were all fabricated, these news reels that we saw of troops beating the hell out of people, you know, and running over top of them in their horses and then shooting some of them? So the history of Nelson Mandela is, whereas he originally supported strikes, boycotts, and peaceful protest, at a certain point he changed his mind and said, you know something, this is going to have to be a violent national liberation struggle, an armed struggle. That was the determination that he made. But he was not always into the violence. So now, and then, as I say, I suppose this involved, you got to understand what these anti-colonial insurrectionist movements were like. Like, for example, one of the most popular films of the 1960s was something called Battle of Algiers. And it was made with documentary footage and very much, I would say, a documentary style, showed but it still told a story, a narrative embedded in the documentary style that basically showed the Algerian independence movement against the French, which began in like 1958, 1959, and then proceeded right on up into the 60s, and finally Charles de Gaulle came to power and negotiated independence for Algeria. But these movements were all over the colonial, you know, the former colonies, and there were many, many, many French-speaking, you know, shall we say European French-speaking people born in Algeria. Because remember, the French conquered Algeria, I believe, under Napoleon Bonaparte. And so there were families, French-speaking families, that were there for, you know, a century or more, certainly a couple generations. And they really had, many of them were forced out and had to go back to France, lost, you know, their land and everything. They had a privileged position. And, I mean, you would want to go into the whole question of colonialism, No, not really. We dealt with that in connection with the Vietnam War. The Vietnam War is a legacy of French colonialism in what was called French Indochina, which is Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia, which they took over in the 19th century and then, you know, made their colony there. You can watch the movie Apocalypse Now, which has a nice clip that shows where the American PT boat stumbles onto an old French plantation where these French people who have lived in Vietnam and cultivated a rubber plantation for like 100 years are fighting. I guess they were fighting off the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese. And this is the tragedy of colonialism. Settler, you know, European settlers who came to these places. And, you know, Hong Kong is a great example of that because Hong Kong was built up by the British Empire. And Xi Jinping just gave a speech, got no coverage in the Western media. Xi Jinping just delivered a major speech to the, I guess, the Chinese National Assembly, one of their big outfits. It was broadcast.
What was he talking about?
Oh, he said that they had now secured complete integration of Hong Kong into the People's Republic, and very soon they were going to have that with Taiwan. They were going to do the same with Taiwan.
Okay.
That unquestionably Taiwan was part of China, and they were going to do the same with Taiwan as they had done with Hong Kong. They were going to bring it in to the People's Republic.
Wow. What's Biden going to do about that? Probably nothing.
Well, this involves the role of the – I listened to a hearing on C-SPAN today where this congressman, what the hell is his name, Gallagher, I think. He's obviously he has some military background. He was talking about the money that's going to have to be allocated to technologically upgrade the U.S. Navy so it can destroy or have countermeasures against the Chinese, the rapidly growing Chinese Navy. Chinese naval presence in the South China Sea. And apparently there are technologies now that the Russians and the Chinese have that could pretty much eviscerate. We may have fallen, you know, the United States may have fallen behind technologically in certain areas, militarily speaking. It's very possible. So this is going to be theaters of conflict. And there's a lot of implications here. I just saw a report. I can't believe it's true. But basically, all Americans working in China have been told by the Biden administration, I guess he could do this, could he do this by executive order, that if they stay in China, they will lose their American citizenship, that they can no longer work in the semiconductor industry. I'm not sure if it was all Americans or only Americans in the semiconductor industry. And maybe all, you know, any Americans, and definitely any Americans involved in the semiconductor industry in China are being forced out or else they're going to have to give up their U.S. citizenship. Now, and the Chinese do not have a semiconductor manufacturing capability yet. They're obviously, rapidly trying to build one, but they don't have one yet. And this could be sort of a crisis for them if they lose it. It would set them back a few years. But guess who is the world's leading manufacturer of semiconductors? Taiwan.
Right.
So if they take over Taiwan, that solves the problem for them. And that's got to be the strategic objective, to take over Taiwan. It's as critical to them as the Donbass is to Russia. Crimea would be to Russia. Very strategic.
Right. You mean for...
They're never going to give that up. The Russians are never going to allow NATO missiles right on their border. That's ridiculous. That was a stupid thing to try and do. But I'm not surprised, you know, because Newland, Kagan.
Have you looked into the Les Luthor stuff, who talks about illusion warfare that I posted on FakeOTube? What did you think of that? I thought that was pretty powerful.
I'm sure that's what a lot of that stuff in Ukraine was at first, but now there appears to be real destruction going on. That is to say, real demolitions of power stations and water purification plants. And I'm told that as much as a third of the population of Ukraine right now is without power or clean running water because of Russian missiles, very, very precisely targeted Russian missile strikes. Now, are these atrocity stories? I'm seeing a lot of very convincing coverage of this. And what we want is confirmation of it. Sure, in the beginning, they probably it's a lot of play acting. But, you know, at a certain point, the population relocation becomes real. If you look at the numbers of immigrants coming into the United States over the last year, I am given to understand that the number coming from Ukraine is actually exceeding the ones coming from, say, Venezuela or even
wow.
possibly.
Is that getting any press in the U.S.?
No, like no coverage. But they are bringing in thousands of Ukrainians.
How do they come in? Military planes or just flying?
Probably.
In? Yeah.
Probably. They're probably just flying. And some of these Ukrainians showed up at the January 6th, in so-called January 6th insurrection. They're right there in the picture with some of the leading figures that led the assault on the Capitol. What are they doing there? Well, I guess they're posing as crazy Trump followers seizing the U.S. Capitol. That's what they do with some of these immigrants. They bring them here and they deploy them in things like Sandy Hook or the Boston Marathon, like the Tsarnaev brothers, right? They were brought here from like they came here from Chechnya. And then somebody in their family married into the family of Graham Fuller, who was like a major CIA officer. And, you know, who knows? The Tsarnaevs are probably part of the CIA's operation to simulate Chechen terrorism, you know, Muslim Chechen terrorism, because the Chechens are principally Muslim, and that's why there was a Chechen revolt against Russia, after the end of the Cold War, and supposedly the Russians bombed the hell out of the place. They bombed the capital, Grozny, and did unleash a lot of destruction. And there was an event called the Beslan Theater, in which some Chechen terrorists allegedly massacred a bunch of people. Or what really happened, we were told, is that when the Russian military came in to rescue them, it used tear gas. But it used so much tear gas, it actually killed some of the people in the theater. That's something that needs to be revisited because, you know, people could say that that was staged as well. But I tell you, it was staged pretty convincingly. So that place is, you know, Russians have always had those issues because they were an empire ruling. You know, you had the Crimean Tartars, who are another sort of Muslim group that had to be sort of moved around and, I think Stalin relocated most of them so that the Soviet Union could really consolidate its control over Crimea. It was Nikita Khrushchev who made Ukraine into like a major constituent of the USSR, added land to added Crimea to it and other places to it, because Khrushchev was himself Ukrainian. He was party boss in the Ukraine, and this was part of building up his political power base. That's how they do it.
Right.
There's a long, long history to this. And if you get into a place like Rhodesia and Ian Smith, for example, and Robert Mugabe, or South Africa with Botha and de Klerk and Mandela. I was interested in Mandela because as a member of the South African Communist Party, He quit the Communist Party at a certain point, and then subsequently he became a Knight of Malta. And there's pictures of Nelson Mandela wearing the cape and the
oh wow
medallion and all that. Yeah, let's just look for Nelson Mandela, Knight of Malta. And at the time, I wondered, he must have resigned from the Communist Party to become a Knight of Malta, because doesn't the Pope have to sign off on that and the Queen and all these people? Yeah, Nelson Mandela is a Knight of Malta. That's a pretty big deal, right? I mean, that shows that he's sort of been, well, Knight of Malta answers to the Pope, I guess. Anybody remember Desmond Tutu?
Oh, yeah. Is he another S-mom? Sovereign military, is he an S-mom as well?
Sovereign Military Order of Malta. That's the technical name for the Knights of Malta.
So Desmond
Sovereign
is,
meaning.
Desmond's
sovereign
in
meaning
it too?
What's that?
Desmond is in it.
Oh,
too?
I don't know. I don't know if he's in it. He's a minister, and I believe he is an Anglican minister.
Here you go.
But he was.
Oh, you can't see the picture.
Right. I mean, Sovereign Military Order of Malta, which goes all the way back to the Middle Ages. These are the guys who inherited the stuff that the Templars lost. They took over, you know, Malta, the island of Malta, and they carried on, basically. They were founded during the Crusades, but they ended up, as I say, they and the Hospitallers, who are the Knights of St. John, all inherited all the possessions that were taken from the Templars by the King of France, Philip le Bel, when he burned them, allegedly burned them all at the stake in 1307, or 1307. But, yeah, you know, a Sovereign Military Order of Malta means you carry a diplomatic passport.
Right, right, right.
You travel, you don't have to, you don't have to be searched by the TSA or anybody like that when you're on international flights, because you got a you got this special diplomatic passport. That's why it's called Sovereign Military Order of Malta. And
I'm going to use that picture as my album art for tonight's show. That's a good one.
Well, I think, you know, if Nelson, what kind of oaths did Nelson Mandela have to take in order to receive such a high honor?
Of course, of course.
Yeah, and he may have also received other honors from the Queen. You know, South Africa had been a British colony, and I think, didn't they remain within the British Commonwealth? They had been isolated from the British Commonwealth during the apartheid period. During that period, when, as Peter Wright would say,
Desmond Tutu has a the five-pointed thing on his thing too. He's wearing
cape
too.
Well, he may also be a Knight of Malta.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got your Knights of Malta, and you can be a Dame of Malta as well. You know, it's just a knighthood, like the, you know, like the Order of the Garter.
Right.
that's another one. That would be of great interest to me to know whether Nelson Mandela had to resign from the South African Communist Party in order to become a member of the Sovereign Military Order of Malta and renounce his communist affiliation, or whether he retained that right on up to his death.
Desmond just died last year, apparently. And here we go. Yeah, he got the Royal Order of Francis I.
Yeah.
He's got them all.
You know, these guys are supposed to be such great liberators of the common people. So why do they, you know, here in the United States, we actually sort of wrote into our Constitution that you couldn't swear allegiance to one of these foreign knighthood orders, because
right,
that made you a vassal of a European monarch or the Pope.
That's right.
And that was, we were a republic. That just was not allowed, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
As opposed to Canada, where, oh, they love that stuff up in Canada.
Oh, yeah.
They just love that stuff.
Yeah, we eat it up.
That
right.
is interesting.
Well, you got about 15 more minutes. Where else you want to go tonight? What have you been looking into?
Well, do you want me to address the Kanye West thing? Because that's what everybody's apparently hung up on right now. You
All right. Is he a good guy or a bad guy?
You mean, does he? Well, he's a,
who's he working
somebody
for? What's his name? Ye? Another one of these.
Yeah, that's short, I guess, for Kanye or something. But you can listen to that 3-hour interview yourself, actually.
Kanye
because
West
they,
agrees to buy Parler. Here we go with the nonsense.
Yeah, right. He's got enough. Basically, he's saying, I'm the black guy with the money that's able to take on the Jewish media. That's as he puts it.
Right.
He likes using the,
right. Right. Why, yeah.
But here's the thing about Kanye. I will respond to your question. This is the professor questioning me. And the question I'm supposed to analyze intelligently here is, does Kanye know what the fuck he's talking about or not?
Oh,
and
he's mixed up
with
the George Floyd thing, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Thank
you. He's there confirming hoaxes.
Well, he's claiming that they were trying to – he's involved – it's like Alex Jones again. Remember Alex Jones had the messy divorce? And part of that, did it involve any child custody, or were they already old enough that that wasn't an issue? Because Kanye is involved in this ongoing child custody dispute with the Kardashians, you know, because I guess he's divorced from Kim Kardashian, whatever. And, you know, not to be too hard on Kanye, but when you see him get up on that high horse and start preaching about the Bible and what a good Christian man he is and how he's trying to protect his kids from being sexualized, that's what he says, by Kim Kardashian and her Hollywood handlers and the Jewish media, I guess. Hey, you know, dude, look, Ellen Benjamin put this very well, right? Kanye, when you really, on the way up the ladder of success, you married into the Kardashians. Kim Kardashian initially became famous because she was producing porno videos that her mother was, you know, selling, was you know, propagating, you know? So you married a porn star, Kanye. What did you think you were doing, you know? But as I say, the biggest disappointment to me from Kanye was, am I to believe that he hasn't yet figured out that the whole George Floyd thing was fake, phony, staged?
He didn't have to find out. He was told, I'm sure. So he knows what's going on. He's just there to help reinforce myths. Yeah, these people are read in. They don't need to... Yeah.
Well, then he's a lying sack of shit.
Of course.
And I tell him so to his face. I'd say he's basically putting himself out there as the next black messiah. I'm gonna show the way. I'm gonna model how we blacks are gonna come into our own. And instead of letting the Jewish people represent us, his claim is that the interests of blacks had been hijacked and represented by Jews. Powerful, wealthy Jews, ownership of the various professional sports teams, people like Harvey Weinstein and Hollywood, you know, that whole and the record industry, I guess the recording industry, you know, has a lot of Jews managing it too. Is perhaps dominated by Jews. I've heard that. But the thing I'm saying is, you know, hey Kanye, this is nice that you want to salvage the political independence and intellectual integrity of the black community, but you're not the one to do it, dude. You're no messiah, really. You know, if you can't even, you know, if you're not even going to tell people the truth about the George Floyd hoax and other events that have been staged. Now, he started to do that with Uvalde in that interview with Tucker Carlson. He said, Kanye said, you can go back and watch that one. Kanye said that when he first heard the reporting on the media of the alleged Uvalde school shooting massacre, and he saw how the reporting and the story was synchronized on all these different media.
Right, that was interesting, yeah.
He said, I thought I was living in the Truman Show.
Right, just dropping all the – it's almost like he's written these – he's been given the script to speak.
Okay.
Oh, you think?
Okay, you'd have to believe that he was a fool or too lazy to even look at the pictures of the alleged perpetrator of the George Floyd death, Derek Chauvin,
right,
who's played by two completely different actors. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, their faces don't even look alike. One of them looks like 20 years young. The guy who has his knee on George Floyd's neck in that famous video, he looks 20 years older than the guy you see in court.
You got it. Yeah.
So are you telling me that Kanye doesn't see that? There are plenty of very bright, intelligent African-American podcasters out there who have pointed this out. I've watched their videos. A lot of black podcasters immediately jumped on this and says, we're being played, guys. This George Floyd thing is some kind of Masonic hoax. A lot of them have said that. So, no, I don't give Kanye any slack on that. You're right.
Yeah.
He probably knows about the George Floyd thing being fake, and he's probably lying about it. Now, we may see him come around on that, you know. He could turn around tomorrow or the day after or next week and say, hey, you know, this George Floyd thing was a stage or it was fake. Nobody really died. But he didn't do that.
Yeah, I doubt it. Whatever he says, it'll be carefully orchestrated to make us look foolish. So,
well, that's his role then.
Yeah,
another stupid, you know, failed black messiah. After Colin Kaepernick was the last black messiah we had, right?
Yeah, I didn't even know what he was talking about. So I just remember the knee, take the knee crap. But no, I didn't really.
Well, Colin Kaepernick was protesting Don't you remember they come out with hands up, don't shoot? You remember that? All the players would come out with their palms up in the camera saying don't shoot because they were protesting. It might have been the Fulton, Missouri incident, or, you know, there was an incident in which, you know, a typical George Floyd-style incident where basically a black guy was shot by cops. And, you know, there were questionable circumstances, dubious circumstances, and, you know, maybe the police over it. You know, like the Breonna Taylor thing down in Louisville, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Hands up, don't shoot. The players, the NFL teams were coming out with, and that was their first form of protest. And then they refused to come out for the national anthem.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about all these, because these are all federal operations for the most part. What is the constitutionality of all these federal laws that are imposed on the states, and they're all tried in federal court? And I'm just curious.
No, not all of them are tried in federal court.
Aren't so many the, of the aren't most of the PSYOPs all federal though? So they're all federally run. Is it a pattern though, for the most part?
No. Look, FEMA, DHS, HCEP, mm-hmm. ICE, Integrated Capstone Events.
Right.
Which includes active shooter drills.
Yeah.
They may be run by the federal government, but these cases are prosecuted in state court. Nicholas Cruz was tried in a Florida state court and could have gotten the death penalty.
Okay.
And DeSantis even said, oh, he should have gotten the death penalty. DeSantis doesn't know that Parkland event was staged.
Of course
that
he does.
That thing has got more holes. Yeah, that thing's got more holes in it than the Swiss
cheese. What do you think of every court has a PSYOP, courtroom PSYOP judge?
I ought to go over to the Howard County Courthouse here in Columbia and Ellicott City and see and ask. Because I got about three or four different rooms. It's just, you know, it's not a real big courthouse.
Right.
They got maybe.
Have there been any sort of federal? Is there a federal building there?
I don't think they need to try it in a federal court unless right. it's, first of all, a crime isn't a federal crime unless it's committed in Washington D.C.
Right.
Or on a federal or on say a military base.
But aren't most of the charges federal charges in these PSYOPs? They're all just sort of
not necessarily.
No?
There are no federal charges in the Parkland case. In the Uvalde case. And like I say, the only what would make it federal would be if they could prove an interstate, like for example, with Kyle Rittenhouse.
But I heard that there's a federal law where you can't protest in front of abortion clinics. I think it's called the law is called FACE.
Right, and that falls under RICO or racket. They went after the anti-abortion groups or pro-life groups.
Right.
Whatever you choose to call them.
Freedom of access to clinic entrances, the FACE
Act. Yeah, feds did do that using the RICO statute.
So, okay.
And that's what they would like to do with anything they consider white supremacist.
So my point is that all these big PSYOPs are all run by the Fed, so they create laws that they overlay onto the states, and I'm wondering if that's constitutional the way.
No.
Okay.
I mean, they don't need to do that. The states themselves have these crazy laws. They really do. I mean, come on. You're telling me the state of Florida wasn't running the Nicholas Cruz trial? You're telling me the state of Massachusetts wasn't running the trial of the
Honestly, I didn't even know, so that's why I asked.
Yeah, they are. That's why I'm saying, like Sandy Hook, that was in the state of Connecticut. That
right.
had
right,
you know,
right.
the FBI, they might bring in the FBI to assist in presenting evidence and all that. And like I say, if for some reason, in the case of Kyle Rittenhouse, they say he went from one state to another, so that then involved a possible federal involvement, but he's still facing local state charges. This the Waukesha SUV crashing in Waukesha Christmas Parade massacre, where he allegedly killed six people and injured 50. That's tried in the state of Wisconsin. You know, you could watch the video of that. Hello?
Right.
Even Alex Jones. Well, Alex Jones is a civil suit. But now, to me, making it what you could say is this. They're run as globalist PSYOPs. See?
Okay, right.
Globalist PSYOPs. And Sandy Hook indicated that because if, for example, you look at Veronique Posner, the one playing Noah Posner's mother.
Okay, right.
She worked at the Swiss embassy and holds a Swiss citizenship.
Oh, wow.
Right. Scott Israel, the sheriff down there, who was involved in the Parkland school business. Well, he's a dual U.S. Israeli citizen. You know, do you realize how many local and state police departments train in Israel? We could get into a whole hour on that.
Amazing.
So you want to say, well, it's federal. No, it's globalist. It's global.
But the globalists have infiltrated the federal level the most, but I'm sure they're in every state as well. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if we're looking for some, I know what you're saying. You're saying, well, do they somehow or other make this legal?
I'm just wondering if the federal laws that they pass everywhere are constitutional more than anything.
Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not. No, hate speech. Well, it's probably not. No. But the thing is, they don't even need to do that because there are enough states that are willing to pass laws.
Yeah.
For example, the state of Florida passed a law saying you couldn't do business. You couldn't get a license to do business with this, or you couldn't do business with the state of Florida if you participated in the boycott, divest, and sanction movement or in any way criticized dual citizenship, U.S.
Oh,
dual
wow,
citizens
right, yeah.
Over that... Israel. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, this is much, much bigger than even the federal government, because what they're doing is they're adopting standards from the United Nations or from the – actually, I heard that these hate speech laws against anti-Semitism allegedly or whatever in Florida are – the one in Florida that was passed in Florida I think was signed in Israel itself. Donald Trump went over to Israel and officially signed a U.S. law. It might have been a federal law. Yeah, Donald Trump, I'm pretty much signed off on a federal law, I guess, incriminating anti-Semitism in some way. Yeah, I got to look at the particulars of that. But – or incriminating anything that criticized Jewish interests or Zionist interests or raised the question – of whether certain powerful, wealthy Jews have a dual loyalty that is more to Israel than it is to the United States. And that's a pretty – that's like a no-brainer because they boast about it. Sheldon Adelson, who died fairly recently, huge – probably the largest single cash contributor to the Republican Party. You can watch a video of him at some event where he gets an award and he says, I served in the U.S. Army, but that's my biggest regret. I should have served in the Israeli Army. And my wife was in the IDF, and my kids are going to be in the IDF. He's saying openly and overtly, my family's loyalty to Israel is greater than it is to the United States. And that's the biggest cash contributor to the Republican Party. So, you know, federal, they can make the laws in Tel Aviv for all we know.
All right, let me just look in the chat real quick, the FACOTube chat. Sorry, I keep forgetting to look into there.
Yeah, maybe your listeners there want to raise some salient points or perhaps critique my analysis.
Let's see. Oh, okay. Epic Soul says you sound like a realologist. Jack Waugh says,
well,
ask Lynn what the shape of the earth is. Jack Waugh, Lynn is a sophist.
I can tell you the exact shape of the earth. First of all,
okay,
the oceans are always flat. That's been demonstrated experimentally with the P900,
right,
with the Red Boat experiment. You go out there and watch that video, and that shows that stereoscopic vision, we have two eyes, converges into a vanishing point. But that if you use a very high-powered telescope, right, or binoculars, you can then extend the range of vision for even more miles. So there is no curvature, not on the water. Not on the water. Now, the land is very irregular. It goes up and down. First of all, who is to say, even Neil deGrasse Tyson refers to the Earth as an oblate spheroid.
Right. Meaning, what other planet is an oblate spheroid?
Yeah, right. Right, exactly. The
Do you
moon
see oblate
like
spheroids? Deal. Yeah, you don't see oblate spheroids in the sky.
Right.
If we're supposedly like the other planets, as they say.
Well, how oblate does he mean? Because a disk is an oblate spheroid. I mean, you could take a sphere and crush it, flatten it like a pancake,
right,
And it depends how thick it is. You know, you can make it pretty thin, and that's essentially a flat Earth, isn't it? So,
oh, good point. Yeah, I never thought of that. Yeah.
Yeah, of course, it converges on that. But my thinking is that the Earth's shape is irregular, and it's constantly changing. It's vibrating and pulsating. And I sum that up by saying, someone says, well, what is the precise shape? And I'll say, the precise shape of the Earth is the shape of the vibration of the E string on Jimi Hendrix's Fender Stratocaster guitar. But it first has to be tuned properly. That's the shape of the Earth. It vibrates, it undulates, it oscillates in and out, up and down. It doesn't have a continuous shape. You can see that because the oceans are always moving, but they're flat, right?
Right.
Over the distance, they're flat. You can see the skyline of Chicago, I guess, from across Lake Michigan.
Yeah, I was going to stop there with my camera, but we got behind in my schedule there, so probably won't be going to Chicago again.
Yeah, right. So someone says to me, is the Earth flat? I say, well, the oceans and the lakes and the water is flat. It always spreads out to a level surface everywhere and endlessly flat. As for the land, it depends, you know. There are probably stretches of desert where you could that are just completely flat for miles and miles and miles and miles, right? But then you got your valleys and your mountains and you.
Hey, Lynn, are you still on Facebook or you've been timed out again?
I'm in 30-day lockdown for about 2 weeks because I posted.
Now, how do you log into Facebook? Do you need a name and a password? Because we got to get you back on the Fakeologist forum.
No, I'm on Facebook, but what they've done, you mean should I try to create another account?
No, I'm asking because, how do you log in? Because you say you can't log into the Fakeologist forums, but you can log into Facebook. We got to get you back on the forums.
I can't get to the page anymore. I could. I used to be able to get into your forum, your index, all that stuff, and then all of a sudden I'm getting an error. See, you know something? I just got an obsolete computer. I'm embarrassed because I really need a new computer.
Okay.
I got the old Mac processor. You understand?
Yeah, I know. But that shouldn't have anything to do with it. We got to get you because you did post in the forums many times before.
Yes, I did. For a long time I did. But all of a sudden I lost access to it.
Okay, you're not going to lose access. So if you go click on login.
It's not from you that I'm losing access.
No, I know, but you probably just lost
it's
your password.
It's the browsers, Firefox, and, Opera,
no,
and
you
Safari.
Can, all you need to do is click on Forgot My Password underneath the password. And
No, I can't even get to that screen. Do you understand? It's not that I can't log in. It's that I can't get to the page. Won't load the.
You can't get to Fakeologist forums? At all?
No.
Wow.
No.
Okay.
Not anymore.
I'll give you
anymore.
I'll give you a tech tip. Flush your cache there. Flush.
Okay. I've been doing that, and I'll try doing that again.
Have you tried the Brave browser? Brave browser.
I don't think I could load. My system wouldn't be. I don't think the Brave browser.
Give it a try, Lynn. Give it a try.
I can't even get to every function on Facebook. Because Facebook, here's the message. You are using an unsupported browser.
Oh, okay.
Do you ever get that message?
No. When are you going to update your computer? Come on.
I got to go out and spend some money. I just had to put a new roof on the house, new siding on the front.
All right.
But, yeah, I can afford another computer. You're right. I should just get
You can go get a used one. And even a used one would be better. Get back on the forums.
You really like to see the stuff I post, huh?
Yeah, well, I can't. You post a lot of good stuff on Facebook. If anyone wants to find you on Facebook, it's Lynn Ertel. I find you interesting. A couple people. Jacques calls you a sophist, but
sophist.
A sophist.
Yeah, sophist. Yeah, that's somebody who uses words too glibly, without and argues. Well, because I argue both sides, I consider all sides of the argument.
Well, I find you a wealth of knowledge. You've got a lot of history. A lot
because,
of knowledge.
You know, as far as real being a realologist, well, I'm at the point now where I want to start looking at kinetics.
Okay.
Because the thing is, some of this stuff is really, you know, the war, like especially with these wars, you know, they really are moving populations around and they are demolishing things.
Hey, what's this thing on Las Vegas you put on there?
In Vegas?
The Vegas shooting. What do you got here?
Oh, yeah, the argument of the Vegas shooting? Yeah, I probably have some stuff about that. That was
no,
a
you posted
deal.
A video from Jack Ryle on your Facebook page on October 5th. Is that worth going on fake or two?
Yeah, he's one of my friends on Facebook who's a fakeologist, definitely, and an auto hoaxer. He's a pretty strong auto hoaxer.
All right. Is that a good one? Is that a good video?
Yeah. 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 He basically, he shows how the whole thing was just, you know, it's, I mean, a lot of these people, I tell you what I favor. I don't like spending a lot of time on the numbers. I really feel like people are into the numerology and the gematria, you know, the numerology a little too much. Yeah, I know. All right, big deal. Are there 9/11 and, you know.
On September 7th of this year, James
Newman,
CEO of MGM and owner of Mandalay Bay Hotel, sold.
Okay, so that one you might recommend. See, you post a lot of good stuff on Facebook, but
yeah.
Who sees it and you keep getting banned, so you may as well come onto a better platform.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, because as it stands now, you're right. I can't. Facebook is one of the few places where I was able to still put stuff out there. Over time, I lost access. You know, I used to be in the chat room at No Agenda podcast for years. I was in the chat room at No Agenda.
Oh yeah.
And then one. Yeah.
You
and then
still
one
listen
day
to that show?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I.
It's
I
pretty good.
It.
It's pretty good.
I downloaded it. You know, I get a little bit of. I really get impatient with these guys because, it, like you said, Adam Curry keeps saying, "Oh, I got the COVID," like it's real. You know, that annoys me because I got to believe he knows better.
Yeah, that annoys me too.
Right. And they've always tiptoed, you know, pussyfooted. That's the expression. They pussyfooted around this question of how real these active shooter events are. The one who seems to be coming around to an auto hoax fakeology position is John C. Dvorak. I noticed over the last 6 months, he's getting more and more skeptical about these active shooter events to the point now where, you know, he's not buying into them. So maybe that, you know, they're finally going to come around, but those guys, they take so long to come around to where they, you know, it's almost like they're afraid to say certain things because they won't get invited. Because Curry won't get invited back on the Joe Rogan show.
Right.
Joe Rogan, you know, and, one thing that Adam Curry has brought in several times that really annoys me is the claim that the explanation for these mass shootings is SSRI pharmaceutical drugs.
Oh, right. I know.
Yeah,
that's
he's
his
always
go-to.
Saying that. Yeah. Oh, they're covering up the effect of SSRIs. I would have no doubt that they might be using SSRIs to control the patsy and the actors. But
your buddy Jack Ryle posts a lot of good stuff.
Oh yeah, he's the people who I share on Facebook. They're pretty good. Another one is Jeff Serafini. He's pretty good. There are, you know, Facebook is a good venue. Where people are always getting locked down, of course, but it's still a very useful. You know, with all the censorship and everything, you know, there's people I'm in contact with on Facebook now for years now, and we're always sharing information. And as soon as one of these events happens, we're asking each other, hey, what do you think happened? Have you looked at this? Have you looked at that? And, you know, the Uvalde thing, man, people right away. Of course, there are now alternate platforms, okay? There is brand new Tube. There is UGetTube. UGetTube has a whole library of stuff on Uvalde and Sandy Hook. There are alternative platforms to YouTube, although Fakeologist is the best. I mean, FakeTube is definitely the... FakeTube is the first place I would go to.
I appreciate
it. But there are others have started video platforms as well. We shouldn't... No one should be enslaved to YouTube. That's ridiculous, really. YouTube is a crock of shit. Yeah, they really are. But, you know, they still... It's like people come out to YouTube, newbies and normies come out to YouTube. So, you know, maybe that's the... I like the way IPS handles YouTube. He keeps killing channels and recreating them, right? Every time they cancel him, he just creates a new one. So it's hard.
Well, he does a good job. It's too much.
Yeah, that's what you got to do with these people because the censorship thing, that's going to be, you know, that's...
Yeah, that's a big one. That's coming.
It's a big one.
Yeah, that's a big one. But will it just be intimidation? I don't know. Well, Steven really likes your stuff. He's sending messages in the FakoTube chat, so you got a fan there. So you got some fans, you got some critics, but that's how you know you're doing well.
Yeah, and I understand, you know, that I'm dangerously traversing into realology territory, but that's always.
Well,
what
we brought
I'm
you back.
Because,
we brought you back a little.
You know, it isn't enough for me to say, "Hey, this is fake," and that's the end of it. That's fake. You know, don't pay any attention. No. There are real world. I mean, look, you checked out the Canadian truckers convoy.
I never went.
Right,
it was too
right.
Cold.
But you basically spoke and interviewed. You know, you delved into. You know, a lot of the people that were involved in it and stuff like that.
Yeah, shady, very strange, very strangeness. But that doesn't mean that it wasn't a very positive thing overall. But anything, any large gathering, any large operation is going to be infiltrated if it's not steered. So we know that.
In the case of Kanye West, okay, so he's saying, well, the reporting of the Uvalde event was just like the Truman Show. Well, we should call his bluff and say, well, how do you know the George Floyd thing was real then? What are you saying? He wouldn't come out on Tucker Carlson and absolutely say that this was a drill and that it was staged. All he would say is that the media coverage was so perfectly synchronized and so uniform, it was like they planned it.
Yeah.
Well, come on, dude. I mean, you know, look at the obvious, you know.
Okay.
But you're pretty cynical about these Hollywood hip-hop characters anyway that you think they mostly know what's going on.
I think they're so influential. They have so many followers. They're going to be used.
In other words, you're not going to buy the stupidity or the ignorance.
No, I'm going to auto-hoax their butts too, for sure. Well, Lynn, this was a great chat. Let me just, when you get your new computer, come back on the forums. We're going to start a new Discord/server/social media.
I've never been on Discord.
Yeah, well, we just got booted off for, I think it was the fourth time, but I'm not sure. It might be the third time. So they just nuked our server while our tech guy is flying to Australia right now. But they're going to work on something new. Going to work on a Matrix server. That's our next little project. So we're gonna have some fun there, I think.
Yeah. One cautionary note here.
Go for it.
Okay. This is something where, you know, maybe Marcus Allen might have something to say about this, because I know he's into statistics and marketing.
Yeah.
I don't care about the – screw the numbers. I'm looking at the demographic spread. I'm looking at the quality. I have a cadre development perspective.
Oh, good.
I'm not looking to recruit masses. Screw that. The masses are going to hide in their basement.
Absolutely.
Really,
absolutely.
You know,
I'm not going to – just because we have a solid group here. We have some solid guests like yourself that you are constantly researching all this stuff. We have a solid bunch, and we like to get together and meet. So, yeah. Okay, we're getting – our numbers are not going to double and triple like the fake numbers on Twitter and YouTube. But we're steady. We're a steady group, steady as she goes.
There is a phenomenon that's growing out there. I've seen it a lot on Facebook. It's mostly on Facebook. It's called the First Amendment Audit. And
I love that stuff.
Okay. Now, these are people really going out there with cameras.
I know. They've got balls of steel.
Right. And I feel like that's very important at this time, because that's venturing into what I would call realology.
And that's not going to last long. How long are they going to be able to keep doing that? I always feel nervous for these guys, honestly.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's taken into the streets.
Yeah.
That's what we used to say in the 60s. In the 60s, we said, we're tired of sitting around speculating and theorizing and intellectualizing. You know, let's take it to the streets. And the question is, how do you take it to the streets? How do you – you can't do that right away. That's premature. But you should be building to that point where you really do have the kinetic forces to do something meaningful, you know, to shut down an operation. IPS seems to think that we have preempted and possibly prevented certain, you know, Oladamagard makes that case, although his views are a little bit I don't know, a little bit off.
Yeah, I'm not into him anymore. Yeah.
Okay.
Well I was only for a few minutes.
Okay, because he positively.
And where is he now? He's disappeared.
I haven't seen or heard from him much. I think Jim Fetzer interviews him from time to time.
Oh,
but his thing is that this is an international group of actors that go. They stage these things in Europe. They go around the world, New Zealand. They go around the world staging these things.
Maybe.
And that's a plausible model for me. The other thing I want to draw attention to is I've been discussing a lot on IPS this notion of the cast of thousands, which is a Hollywood idea, right? You used to see movies with a cast starring this, a starring that, and a cast of thousands. Ben-Hur, for example, where they literally had to have thousands of extras sitting in the bleachers of the Circus Maximus as they ran those chariots around. All these people are participating in this massive, expensive, incredibly expensive, big-budget Hollywood blockbuster film. Well, what else are these integrated capstone events but expensive movies? It's the same thing. They're movies made for TV news. What else was 9/11?
Absolutely.
And the cast of thousands is we're posing the question of just how filthy, rotten, dirty, corrupt is this population that just to hire extras to be on the scene, people that are willing to be extras. The scene at Sandy Hook where they're walking around in a circle, going in and out of the building in a circle. Just think of all.
Les Luthor says the same tank drives around in a circle in Kiev.
Oh, yeah, I don't doubt that, but that doesn't mean that there isn't real destruction going on.
Yeah,
this is something we got to nail down.
Yeah, it'll be hard. Well, war is strategic demolition and controlled demolition and strategic relocation, so.
Right, so 9/11 was a strategic demolition.
Absolutely.
But they didn't remove the asbestos first, so all the people that were in the neighborhood.
I posted a video, by the way, on FakoTube, not on FakoTube, just on Fakeologist blog. They said even the new World Trade Center, the Freedom Tower, is another white elephant. So that's another thing. And the extra towers they're going to build around are all behind, and there's no demand. And it's almost like a repeat.
Well,
story.
That's like one of these multi-million dollar hot. It reminds me of when they say, well, the latest Hollywood movie that's out, the latest version of Star, these crappy movies that they come out with. Cost all this money but failed at the box office. Because nobody goes to the movie theater anymore anyway, right?
Well, I do. I went to the Elvis movie.
Okay. But you like seeing it on the big screen. But the thing is...
People do go still. People still do like a few...
But they don't make back their money. They don't make back their money on these spectacles.
I don't know. Maybe on the comic book movies, I think they make them in spades, even though they spend tons on CGI. You see the credits on those movies? They're 10 minutes long.
Yeah, I can't believe they're as expensive as the movies that Hollywood used to make were real. I mean, where the effects was real stunts and, flaming cars and stuff like that. You're right, all that stuff's CGI now, but...
Yeah, that costs big bucks, too. Come on.
Yeah, I always recommend people watch the film, won an Academy Award, I think, in the 70s. Day of the Locust, based on the 1937 novel by Nathaniel West, which is really a brilliant historical presentation of this surreal other world in Hollywood, California, at the same time as the entire nation was like suffering in this miserable economic depression, people starving. And, sleeping on the streets and everything else. But in Hollywood, unlimited budgets, enough to hire a cast of thousands. And that's what we're going to be living through here, right? Homeless, tent cities and homeless. You've already seen these videos of the streets of L.A. and everything else. It's a mess. Yet they're going to have millions and millions of dollars, government tax dollars, to carry out these spectacles, these movies made for TV news. And when they bring in that cast of thousands and maybe a star or two, like, you know, in the Vegas shooting, they had, I don't know, some country music mediocrity up there. When they bring in these characters, it's the same thing as Hollywood was doing with movies. I mean, it's staged the same way. The difference is the people who participate in this know damn well it's being done to propagate a false media narrative, bearing false witness to death. That, you know, some say that it's to advance gun control laws. I don't really think that's the case anymore, but I think it is about advancing a police state agenda and a surveillance agenda and making people scared and paranoid. So, you know, that's what you get out of these First Amendment audits. You see these people who in the old days would never cared if someone took their picture or was videoing
right.
them. You know, the stereotype of the Japanese tourists with their cameras. Nobody ever minded that. But all of a sudden, these people come out of the woodwork. They have no problem with Edward Snowden telling us that NSA collects all our telecommunication in violation of the Fourth Amendment. No problem with red light cameras and CCTV cams all over the cities. No problem with, you know, smart devices in your home that are measuring your energy use. They have no problem with that. No, they got a problem with an ordinary citizen journalist with a camera or two out there on a public street in a public space or in a post office videotaping what's going on. They got a problem with that because it's not officially authorized. That's Stalinism. That's all that is. And that's where the reality emerges, you see. That's where you get to see who are the collaborators, the people that are going to go along with the state-sponsored crimes, you know, and the real murders that are going to take place, and then say it didn't really happen, or people disappeared under Stalin, you know. One day somebody would be gone, and, you know, you weren't supposed to talk about it. So how long will it be before we reach that point, and will we still be saying it's fake? Anyway.
I don't know. Well, good call, Lynn. Thanks for coming on short notice. Always interesting, and you've been a caller for a long time on different shows, so it's always fun to have you on, and we'll have to have you back and get you on the forums.
Yeah, I need to upgrade my hardware for sure, because it's just stuff I got now is obsolete.
Yeah, we're going to get you upgraded. You got to get upgraded. Go get at least – you can get a used laptop. I always buy the used laptops.
Yeah,
you can buy high-end used laptops. You get a real good deal, so that's what I'd recommend. Lenovo, if you want a laptop.
Say that again?
Lenovo, IBM's laptops, they're solid.
Okay,
I always buy them used. Well, I always buy them used because they're thousands of dollars new, but you can get them used for $500.
Yeah,
and they're...
I thought I could get a MacBook for under $1,000, but maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Well, yeah, if you're a Mac person, then you have to get a MacBook. I always buy.
Well, I don't know. I've used Windows too. I spent 35 years using Windows.
Well, there you go.
At work, because it was the industry standard at work, but at home, I always had a Mac.
Well, you should maybe try Windows again. I'm not an Apple person, but Lynn, thanks so much for calling in. I got to get to work to see if I can get a Matrix server going on, so I can.
That sounds complex.
It does sound like a headache, actually. But we're gonna give it a whirl. I'm gonna get it going. I want to see if it's worth putting. I don't want to put energy into a Discord and have it blown away again. Get it nuked, though. So.
Yeah, wherever they've got control over it, it's going to be compromised sooner or later. That's the problem.
Well, yeah, this is supposed to be open source and independent, so.
Oh, well, open source is a step up.
Yeah,
sure.
I think so. And self-hosted, too. Anyway, thanks, Stephen. Stephen is a big fan of tonight's show, so I appreciate everyone who listens, so.
Hey, yeah, everybody contribute. All right.
Yeah, really. All right, thank you, Lynn. All the best, huh?
Have a good one.
All right, take care. There goes Lynn Ertel. Man, she can really deliver. Very interesting. And thanks to the new theme music. Well, we're just trying it out. Give me a vote, thumbs up or thumbs down, if you like the theme music. He said he can do other stuff, and that is Real M Trotter X. Kind of low key. Kind of chill. All right, we're going to work on the Matrix server. That's going to cost more money, the Matrix server. You guys want to kick in, fakeologist.com/donate. The operation does cost money now, which I don't mind because it's fun technology. So fakeologist.com/donate. We'll take even a dollar. Jacquois, thank you. I think, Jacquois, you're in the audience tonight. And I'm just looking at my thing here, and you sent $1, and I got 69 cents of that US, so I appreciate that. That's very generous. Epic Cash, if you send Epic Cash, it's much more. Well, I get all the Epic Cash. The PayPal just takes such a huge chunk. It's kind of ridiculous, actually, isn't it? They took 32 US cents out of your $1 donation. So yeah, I would highly recommend Epic Cash if you can. That's a better way of doing it. But thank you. And thank you to a recent donation by Go Find the Others. I appreciate that. 33. Very nice number. Thank you, Jacob. Very nice. We'll use that for the Matrix server that we're going to try and get going. So we're going to work on that tonight. We've got a couple audio chats to put on. So we're going to be busy. All right. Thank you, everyone, for joining. Have a good night.